Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Coca-Cola FEMSA's third quarter 2014 conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and all participants are in listen-only mode. At the request of the company, we will open the conference up for questions and answers after the presentation. During this conference call, management may discuss certain forward-looking statements concerning Coca-Cola FEMSA's future performance and should be considered as good faith estimates made by the company. These forward-looking statements reflect management's expectations and are based upon currently available data. Actual results are subject to future events and uncertainties which can materially impact the company's actual performance. At this time, I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Hector Trevino, Coca-Cola FEMSA's Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead, Mr. Trevino.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us this morning to discuss our third quarter results. In the quarter, despite a continued soft consumer environment, we delivered over 11% revenue growth based on the resilience of our portfolio in Mexico and Argentina, ongoing growth in Colombia and Central America, and revenue management initiatives across our territories. Excluding the recently integrated territories in Brazil, total revenue grew 3%. Our wide array of returnable presentations, our ability to offer packages at attractive and affordable price points for our consumers, and the strength of brand Coca-Cola continue to generate increased transactions across our territories. As has been the case this year, lower PET and sweetener prices in most of our territories were partially offset by the average depreciation of the currencies in most of our operations. Consequently, our organic gross margin expanded 90 basis points. Despite higher labor and freight costs, especially across the South America division, operating expenses remain under control across our operations and have decreased as a percentage of revenues in most of them. For the quarter, our organic EBITDA margin expanded 150 basis points, highlighting our company's ability to deliver profitable results in challenging conditions. As a reminder, since the beginning of 2014, we have used the SICAD exchange rate to convert our Venezuelan operation results into Mexican pesos. This exchange rate was 12 bolivars per US dollar as of the end of September. Now let's discuss our operations. In Mexico, this year, consumers had to adjust their budgets in the face of tough environment characterized by increased taxes and higher prices across categories. Despite this complicated consumption scenario, our operators have successfully created relevant portfolio alternatives to increase transactions in Mexico by close to 2%, despite of volume remaining flat. This positive gain highlights our consumers' continued connection with our portfolio. Importantly, our returnable portfolio extended its positive volume performance by growing more than 6%. Gaining 230 basis points in our mix to reach more than 38% of our sparkling beverages. As has been the case recently, our 500 milliliter returnable glass presentation grew 31%. Our 1.25 liter returnable glass presentation grew 24%, and our 3-liter returnable PET presentation almost doubled its volume, playing a strong defensive role by serving consumers who were forced to adjust their budgets this year. This performance continues to underscore the current reality of consumers looking for increased value in every transaction. The strong brand equity of Coca-Cola was once again evidenced by the success of the Share a Coke campaign. Since its launch in July, we have been able to grow volume of our cans and 600 milliliter presentations which together grew more than 2%, generating more than 23 million transactions. Consumer engagement has been so positive that we have decided to extend this promotion into October, adding new personalized names to a list of already more than 300. Since the beginning, for those who were not able to find their names on one of our presentations, we installed more than 180 personalization centers in our territories, enabling us to engage more than 500,000 additional consumers since the launch of this successful campaign. Additionally, at the beginning of September, we launched Coca-Cola Life, a naturally sweetened mid-calorie version of the world's most beloved brand, available in 5 different presentations, from 8-ounce one-way glass to our new 310-milliliter lean can for modern trade accounts to a 1-liter one-way PET. This brand allows to refresh the Coke category in Mexico even more, providing consumers an additional opportunity to interact with their favorite brand. Our low-calorie sparkling beverage portfolio grew more than 1%, driven mainly by Sprite Zero and Citral Mundet Light, along with Coca-Cola Zero, which grew 4%, reaffirming its position as an affordable, low-calorie value proposition for the consumer. Our personal water portfolio grew 5%, while bottled water grew 1%. Our non-carbonated beverage category contracted 7% during the quarter. Despite this contraction, it is worth highlighting that Powerade continued its growth and in August reached the leading position in this category with more than 49% share. Our Mexican operation continues to focus on intensifying connection with our consumers through a wide array of portfolio alternatives while successfully containing operating expenses. In Central America, our acceleration plan, based on enhanced execution levels, increased cooler covers, and the introduction of magic price points, continued to yield positive results. During the third quarter, our volume grew more than 9% in the region. In terms of transactions, our volume grew to 12% this quarter. Growth was mainly driven by a 10% increase of brand Coca-Cola, coupled with 7% growth in flavored sparkling beverages and 21% growth in bottled water. Our non-carbonated beverage portfolio remained flat this quarter. On a per-country basis, Costa Rica grew more than 3%, Panama more than 5%, and both Nicaragua and Guatemala saw a large volume increase of more than 14%. For the quarter, revenues in the Mexico and Central America division grew 4%. Our division's gross margin expanded 80 basis points on the back of lower sweetener and PET prices, which were partially offset by the depreciation of most of our operations currencies as applied to our U.S. dollar-denominated raw material costs. Our division's organic operating cash flow margin expanded 60 basis points for the quarter. Looking at the close of the year, we will continue to reinforce the initiatives that have given us a strong defensive position in Mexico and growth in Central America, reinforcing our returnable presentation base, building on the success of the Share a Coke campaign and the strong brand equity of Coca-Cola, and ensuring the continued performance of Coca-Cola Life. In South America, our operations organic volume increased 1% in the quarter, supported by the continued positive performance of Colombia and sustained growth in Venezuela, which compensated for a flattish Argentina and a volume decline in Brazil, excluding acquisitions. Including the recently integrated franchises in Brazil, the division volume grew close to 20%. In Colombia, we continue posting strong volume and transaction growth as a result of these operations, portfolio and pricing architecture reconfiguration. In the quarter, Colombia's volume grew 11%, successfully building on a 7% growth in 2013 and extending this operation's positive performance to 8 consecutive quarters of growth above 6%. In terms of transactions, this quarter, our Colombia franchise grew 15%. Brand Coca-Cola's volume grew 7%, supported by our market price point strategy, which continues to be very well received by the country's consumers. Year to date, we have been able to gain almost 4 percentage points of market share in the cola segment. Our flavor sparkling beverages grew again this quarter, increasing more than 23%, supported by Cuatro, Sprite, and Cola Roman. Our non-carbonated beverages grew 33%, mainly driven by growth of Del Valle Fresh, Fuse Tea, and Powerade. Since 2012, we have worked together with our partner, the Coca-Cola Company, on a strategy to spur per capita consumption of our beverages. We have installed more than 100,000 additional coolers in our Colombian operations to capture the identified market opportunity. These investments, along with a new plan that will start operations in 2015, underscore the long-term opportunity that we envision to develop our brands in Colombia. Moving on to Venezuela, despite a tough economic environment, our volume was up 3%, successfully building on 16% growth in the third quarter of last year. Moreover, our operation was able to grow transactions by more than 5%. Volume of brand Coca-Cola grew 18%, compensating for a decline in flavored sparkling beverages, as we continue to favor production of the fastest-moving SKUs. Our non-carbonated beverage category grew 3%, mainly driven by the success of Powerade, which continues to grow significantly and gain market share. Our team continues to successfully improve productivity and increase volumes and market share, despite this country's constant challenges. We continue to improve service levels and execution and reinforce the brand equity of our portfolio. Our actions have enabled us to reach record market share for Coke and sparkling beverages in Venezuela. In Argentina, where high inflation rate continues to affect our consumers' disposable income, our volume remained flat for the third quarter. Notably, Argentina delivered growth in transactions of above 1%. Driven by Aquarius flavored water and Bonacqua, volume of our bottled water category grew 25% in the quarter. Non-carbonated beverages grew 5%, mainly supported by the growth of Powerade, which is rapidly gaining share from the competition. These increases compensated for a 2% decline in our sparkling beverages category. Despite this decline, it is important to highlight that we continue to outperform the industry, gaining market share across all categories. We will continue to focus on revenue management initiatives and cost discipline going forward. Our team has the capabilities to reconfigure our portfolio's offering in order to increase the connection with our consumers going forward. In our Brazilian operation, on the back of selected price increases in our portfolio and a continued weak consumer environment, our organic volume declined 6%, but our transactions decreased only 3% for the quarter. Despite of this performance, our Brazilian operations local currency revenue increased 3% during the quarter, enabled us to significantly improve profitability in this operation. Our operators continue to foster the availability of one of our two little returnable presentations and our 1, 2, and 3 real single serve entry packages to generate incremental transactions in the current environment. Our 2-liter returnable presentation for brand Coca-Cola grew 13% in the quarter, improving our mix of returnable presentations by 80 basis points to more than 17%. As we roll out this presentation to the rest of the country, we continue to have the opportunity to increase transactions with cost-conscious consumers. The performance of our affordable portfolio allows to mitigate a decline in the sparkling beverage category. Our bottled water volume grew 4% during the quarter, driven by Cristal. Looking at the final stretch of the year, in Brazil, we will face a relatively low year-over-year comparison as volume in the fourth quarter of 2013 contracted more than 11%. We enter the highest season of demand for the year, aware of the challenging consumer environment, but with a better price portfolio that should enable us to continue improving the profitability of our expanded Brazilian operation. During the quarter, our South American division organic revenue grew 2% on the back of revenue management initiatives in Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil, and volume growth in Colombia and Venezuela. Organically, lower sweetener and PET prices in most of the divisions were only partially offset by the devaluation of certain currencies in the division as applied to our US dollar denominated input costs. Consequently, our organic gross margin expanded close to 100 basis points. Despite ongoing labor and freight cost pressures in Venezuela, Argentina, and Brazil, our organic operating cash flow margin expanded 230 basis points during the quarter. In our Philippines operation, volume grew almost 3% in the third quarter of 2014. Sparkling beverages, supported by the introduction of our single-serve one-way presentations, grew 7% despite a decline in local brands such as Pop Cola. Notably, Coke grew 7%, while Royal, the equivalent of Fanta in this country, and Sprite grew 22% and 19% respectively. The new route-to-market model continues to grow across the country, and we now have the privilege of serving close to 500,000 clients through more than 2,103 sellers, allowing us to better serve the traditional channel in this promising market. Now I will discuss our consolidated financial position. As of September 30, 2014, we had a cash balance of 21.6 billion Mexican pesos, and our total debt was 61.6 billion Mexican pesos. Our net debt to EBITDA ratio is currently at 1.26 times, underscoring the strength and flexibility of our balances and our commitment to deleverage the company. Our comprehensive financial results for the quarter was impacted by the acquisition financing of Spipe and Fluminense, which was swapped into Brazilian reais, a foreign exchange loss related to our US dollar denominated net debt position, and a loss on the monetary position of Venezuela, resulting from the effect of high inflation on a larger monetary position. This quarter, we registered a one-time effect of the settlement of certain contingent tax liabilities at our Brazilian operations under the tax amnesty program offered by this country's tax authorities. This benefit was recorded in the non-operative expenses and income taxes. With this benefit, we expect the effective tax rate for the full year to be around 29%. During the quarter, our net income grew 13%, reaching 3.3 billion Mexican pesos, resulting in earnings per share of 1.61 pesos. Despite the many challenges that we have experienced this year across our operations, our organizational flexibility, our operating capability, and our committed team have enabled us to deliver solid, profitable results. Coca-Cola FEMSA has the right skills to deliver growth in challenging environments and create sustainable value for our shareholders. Operator, I would like to open up the call for questions at this moment.
Thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question, and we'll take our first caller, Antonio Gonzalez from Credit Suisse.
Hi, good morning, Hector and team. Thanks for taking my question and congratulations on the results. Two quick questions, Hector. First, on Mexico. Obviously, with volumes being very close to flat or flat by the third quarter, I guess the sequential improvement relative to the beginning of the year has been above our expectations, and I would presume yours as well. So I just wanted to ask, looking into 2015, you've made comments in previous conference calls regarding how you would not expect the full impact of the excise tax in 2014 to be recovered in 2015. Would these results change your view regarding those previous comments? That's my first question. And then secondly, very quickly on Brazil, my understanding is that in 2013, you lost a huge portion of the profitability there. And obviously, we are seeing in South America already this quarter a huge margin expansion. So I just wanted to ask whether you can give us a little bit more color on what are the initiatives specifically in Brazil that are driving this margin improvement, and if you can help us maybe quantify a little bit how much of the profitability that was lost in 2013 might be recovered in the next 12 or 18 months. Thank you so much.
Good morning, Antonio. Starting with Mexico, I think that one important element to consider here, especially during this quarter, with respect to the volume performance, is the fact that in September of last year, 2013, we were hit by two hurricanes in the Acapulco area that significantly impacted that specific territory, plus the bad weather conditions that we have because of the rain in most of the country. So when you look at the volumes for Mexico, even though we are kind of, you know, flattish versus last year, it's important to take into consideration that we are still struggling with the price increases because of the tax. So my expectation, you remember when we were speaking at the end of 2012, the beginning of 2013, of a 5 to 7% reduction in volume. My perception for the full year will be more in the range of 4% reduction, which is basically where we are now on an accumulated basis as of September. So I'd like first to see how the performance of, you know, the last quarter, before, you know, completely saying that we have totally recover the effect of the tax impact. We have adjusted the operations in Mexico very importantly. We have mentioned that we have reduced our headcount by at least 1,300 people. We have closed production lines. We have reduced the number of distribution trucks that we have in the streets, because with the very large volume base that we have in Mexico, every single point of volume that we lost represents millions of cases. So I think that the company has adjusted to this new environment in Mexico with much higher prices. As you know, we increased prices around 16%. And therefore, we have, I think, worked very diligently in adapting our organization and our cost structure to this new reality. 2050, I would expect to see some growth in volume. But I don't know, we have changed so much in the organization that it's difficult to quantify if we will fully recover the impact of this tax increase. If we move to Brazil and South America, I think that the main impact that you have there, and let me go a little bit country by country. I think that Colombia, we have done a very good job, a tremendous job, I'll say, in growing per capita and growing volume. This is a program that has been there, what we call the Plan Colombia, and we discussed probably a couple of years ago that we would be suffering a little bit on the profitability of Colombia, with the objective of getting some traction with the volume and getting more per capita consumption. I think that we are there. The challenge for Colombia is to start improving the profitability, because a lot of the volume that we're getting in Colombia has to do with reducing prices to magic price points in some of our presentations. And despite the very good volume growth that we have in Colombia, the profitability on those growing is not growing at the same pace as the volume. So the challenge for next year is how do we recover part of that profitability in Colombia. In Venezuela, it's always a challenge. I think that it's very important to point out that compared to last year, when you look at the numbers in local currency, everything is increasing on very large numbers. I mean, revenue is increasing 80%, EBIT increasing 80%. But now we are converting at a 12 Bolivar per dollar exchange rate, the numbers for this quarter, versus 6.3 that we have last year. So in Mexico peso terms, Venezuela is not creating that much of a distortion this time around. Argentina, we are suffering a little bit on the volume, but our operators have really done a very good job in trying to maintain prices, meaning increased prices, with inflation, which is high in Argentina, and try to capture that opportunity and maintain the profitability. And I think that Argentina is one of these cases where you see a reduction in volumes, but profitability increasing. And Brazil, you are correct in pointing out that last year we suffered a lot because of, especially because of the new tax situation that cost, importantly, in the raw materials that we were sourcing from Manaus, in the restrictions for traffic that significantly impacted the growth of our freight expense. And I think that the big change that we are seeing during this quarter is, I'll say, one or two factors. One is the synergy that we are getting as we integrate these new territories, that we are increasing in a very important manner. The growth in Brazil, when you look the old Brazil versus the new Brazil, we have 50% more cases. That certainly brings economies of scale. Second, it's also a lot of focus on controlling costs. And very importantly for us, I think that we are having a much better control on the price point to the consumer and the discounts that we give to the retailers. there was some disarray with the big retailers in so-called atacados in Brazil, where in some cases they were buying thousands of cases and then selling these to small mom and pops. We are having better control on that. And because, in my opinion, because of that fact, we are seeing this effect where you have a better revenue per case without affecting the price to the consumer, because you are basically taking away part of the margin from the retail system. And I think that's a good explanation of what happened basically in South America during this quarter.
Thank you so much, Hector.
Thank you. And up next, we'll take our question from Pedro Leduc from J.P. Morgan.
We have Andrea Teixeira here, J.P. Morgan. And it would be also regarding to Mexico, and specifically Mexico and Central America. We saw SG&A as percentage of sales falling slightly, 40 basis points year over year this quarter, after having risen substantially in the first semester of this year. So this was a source of margin gains now for first this year. And so we're wondering what drove this higher efficiency. You already mentioned some headcount reduction in the call, but if there's more to come and we expect this to be a source of margin improvement also in the fourth and then 2015, please. Thank you.
Good morning, Pedro. In general, it's just working. I mean, we have been discussing probably for 2 or 3 years now that a lot of the focus of the organization was in better controlling SG&A. I think that it has to do with the headcount reduction. There is a little bit of effect of the non-comparability of Jolly at the beginning of the year, but this quarter is fully comparable. So at the end of the day, it's just getting a better grasp on the SG&A cost. We have changed the organization, even our sales organization. We reconfigured from five different sales zones to three. So we are reducing the headcount also in some of the sales organization without obviously losing the contact with the consumer. And I think that all those efforts are now paying off, no? And that's basically the explanation for the better performance of SG&A.
Okay. So a fair read to have it continuing at growing below sales in the near future.
That would be our expectation. Yes.
Okay. No, thank you. Thank you for that. And then just a last quick one in Brazil. If you could remind us when the new plan in Minas comes live, and we understand it's a lot of returnables. So what do you expect differently there? Maybe have an inflection in the sharp volume drops that we've seen this quarter. That'll be all. Thank you.
Good morning. We are basically at the last stages of the plant. The in theory, we will be starting the plant basically less than a month from now, by mid-November. We will have returnable capacity there that will help us a lot to the Belo Horizonte around the Minas Gerais state area. So we should be seeing some savings on freight. And we are very hopeful that this new plan that has been in the work for almost 2 years, it's going to bring some additional efficiencies to the Rafael operation. One of the learnings is that as we try to, and it's the same for Colombia, where we are building also a new plant that will start during the first quarter. But one of the learnings is that every time you go into a huge project like these two plants, the amount of authorizations and permits that you need to get always delays the original plans. But now we are very close to that. We are in the final touches there. We are testing some of the lines, and we should be ready to go by mid-November with the Brazil, with what we call the Tabirito plan, which is in Brazil, and our plan in Colombia by the first quarter of next year.
Great. That's very useful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And up next, we have Lucas Piccia from Goldman Sachs.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I have two quick follow-up. One on Mexico, on the still beverage category performance. We've seen the decline continuing throughout the year. And I was curious to understand now, you know, after 9 months since the price increases from the higher taxes, how do you see the category develop going forward? And is it really a function of affordability, or is there something else that we should consider? And what do you think how it would play out for next year? And secondly, going back to LATAM, Brazil and Colombia, where on the one end, I understand there have been price increases in Brazil. There is a strong focus on improving affordability in Colombia. I wanted to understand if you could comment on how the market share dynamic have also been affected by this these two strategies for the respective markets. Thank you.
Good morning, Luca. Let me start with Mexico and steels. First of all, steels, even though some of them are juices, we are affected by the excise tax. Remember that as long as you have just 1 gram of sugar, added sugar in the product, then you have to pay the new tax that was introduced in Mexico at the beginning of the year. So usually most of the uses, or I'd say 100% of the uses in Mexico and other countries, they need to balance the formulas. We need to add some sugar, very little sometimes, but there, the tax doesn't make a distinction about the amount of sugar. It's just, if you have sugar, you have to pay the 1 peso per liter. In Mexico, we have been suffering a little bit with our competitors because, especially Jumex, in the case of the personalized juices, they didn't increase the price to the consumers. They didn't pass along the tax increase. That's our thing. And we don't know exactly how they are absorbing that. So Jugos del Valle, our brand, is now competing with Jumex, well, especially in the personal size presentations, with this disadvantage that we have a higher price than our competitors. From our opinion is that's the main cause for steels underperforming, especially juices in Mexico. And the dairy category, we are doing very well because we have rolled out the Santa Clara brand to other cities where it was not present before. So we are basically doubling the size of the business in Santa Clara, still from a very, very small base. Very importantly, we, in order to better compete with what I was saying about Jumex and the prices, we need to work in reformulating the product so that to see if we can get a product that will not have to pay the tax, or a formula that will have a lower cost for us so that we have a better margin. But in general, it's kind of disappointing, the performance that we have had, in especially in juices and nectars. Powerade is the price point. We continue to increase volumes there, and as I mentioned during the opening remarks, it's the first time that we achieve leadership in that category, surpassing Gatorade for the first time, which is, if you remember, 3 or 4 years ago, we were speaking about having 10 and 15% market share. Now, for the first time, we're achieving 49%, which is a very important mark for us. So tea category, I hope, my expectation is that next year we'll see a better performance. Let us remind that juices now are more expensive than soft drinks, and so the whole consumer environment with more taxes and taxes on some of the foodstuff and drinks has created some a consumer that doesn't have the same amount of resources, and that's certainly hurting the performance of juices and nectars. But I expect a better performance next year. Now, with respect to Colombia and Brazil. Brazil, as I mentioned, we increased what you're seeing in our P&L is a reflection of a better price per unit case, not so much because we have passed increases to the consumer, but because we have reduced a little bit the margin of the retailer. And that translates into a better pricing for us. In general, in Brazil, we have, and I mentioned this last quarter, we have the highest market share in brand Coca-Cola that we have in the 10 countries in Brazil. And one of the lowest that we have in flavors is also in Brazil. Brazil and Colombia is also the same. So what has happened in Brazil is that the flavor category has grown a little bit in importance within the industry. And that has caused us to lose a few basis points on share. We are gaining market share in cola. We are losing a little bit in flavors, and flavors is growing in importance. But even if we maintain the same market share in flavors, because of the fact of flavors growing within the pie, that will create a smaller erosion in market share in Brazil. In Colombia, it's pretty much the same thing. We have had very good performance in volume-wise. As I mentioned during the comments, we hope that maybe we start seeing a better performance on the financial indicators, better pricing and better margins. But in general, we are increasing share in colas, and we are losing some share in flavors, similar to Brazil. So for the total country, we are basically staying flat. We are increasing 0.3 percentage points, which is basically flat for us. No? So very stable market shares both in Brazil and Colombia with this performance.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
And up next, our question will be from Laura Serra from Morgan Stanley.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I guess I just wanted to ask very quickly on Philippines. The loss seemed to have widened there, but you seem to be making progress on a number of initiatives to improve the franchise. So if you could just give us a sense of what's driving those operating losses, that would be really helpful, please.
Yes, good morning, Lori. Let me go into the Philippines. I think that the good news in the Philippines is that for several quarters in the past, part of the explanation for the poor performance had to do with volume and pricing coming down. We had this effect of brand Coca-Cola growing, but Pop Cola reducing significantly in size. It was part of the strategy that to focus just in one cola, which should be brand Coca-Cola. So Pop Cola will stay with very little volumes in areas where there is a lot of competition, or maybe at some point in time in the future we'll just discontinue the brand. But for many quarters, the story was volume and price declines. This quarter, volume and prices, price and mix is performing well. The issue, which is, and I think that's good news. And let me go a little bit into those two areas. One, I think that the fact that we have more than 2,000 pre-sellers now attending the traditional channel in the greater Manila area, we have seen a lot of progress in terms of market share, in terms of growth of brand Coca-Cola, in terms of growth of all the categories, because we have a better service and better coverage of the traditional channel. During the last two or three quarters, we were facing with this rollback of prices from our competitors. We also rolled down some of the prices. We have gone away from that now. We have increased the prices again of some of the returnable presentations. And importantly, some of these PET presentations that we introduce, in some areas where we have very strong competition, we are maintaining the same price point, but with a 250 milliliter as opposed to 300 milliliter presentation. So we are reducing the size but maintaining the price point. And in areas where we don't have such a strong competition, the 300 milliliter that we were selling at 10 pesos, now we moved that to 12 pesos. So those are very important price increases that are helping the top line of the field. The difficult part right now that is reflected in this in the P&L for this quarter has to do with one issue that is a one-time event that has to do with the Typhoon Glenda. We lost around $8 to $9 million in raw materials that were lost because of the floods, in POP material, in finished product that was lost in some of the distribution centers. Some of the metal ceiling of some of the production plants and distribution centers was blown away, so we have the maintenance expense was also increased. So Typhoon Glenda had an impact of around $8 to $9 million. Most of that was not covered by the insurance policies because the deductible is higher, and the Philippines being in a typhoon area, very difficult to get. It's impossible to get an insurance cover that would cover everything unless you pay a very large amount for insurance. So we have a policy that we think is adequate for the Philippines, but in this case, the effect that we have in every distribution center and plant were small, so that we don't have didn't reach the level of the deductible for this insurance policy. We have some additional labor costs that have to do with these presenters and the new route to market, which is we have the positive side on the volume and pricing, but we also have some additional costs on that. And importantly also is the fact that since this year, we have been confronted with a new situation in the Philippines that has to do with this the so-called truck ban. So during the day, trucks are not allowed to go around the Great Manila area, which is a very important market for us, and freight costs has increased significantly. So we have, I'll say, around $7 to $8 million also that is impacting this quarter versus last year in additional freight cost or transportation cost for us. So we have to adapt our organization to that, Lori. But I'll say the good news is that top line is no longer the problem. It's increasing. We have this additional cost and the effect of the typhoons that at least the transportation cost should be more in our control. We have a new team of people that are the internal experts for logistics now transferred to the Philippines for a few months to work around that and help us organize that. And hopefully next year we'll have a better performance on that market. I hope this is a good explanation of the Philippines.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Thank you very much, Hector.
Thank you.
And our next question will come from James Watson with HSBC.
Good morning, Hector and team. I wanted to talk about the shift to returnables a little bit. Touched on before, you mentioned opening plants in Brazil and Colombia that will specialize or allow you to do more returnables, and we've seen a big uptick in Mexico. My questions are, we've always seen returnables relevant during a downturn. Is this equally as relevant during a recovery? And you know, has there been a shift in your kind of internal strategy with respect to the importance of returnables in your portfolio?
Good morning, James. I think that returnables have always played a role in difficult environments, and by all means, we are going through very difficult environment in Latin America. We have a situation in Argentina. We have the consumer in Brazil. We have the new tax in Mexico, etc. No? So we basically use the returnable products as a way of presenting to our consumer an affordable option. We try to have the same profitability on those presentations than on one-way presentations, and I think that we are very good at that. We have seen times as, for example, in Argentina, where right now it's around 19% is the importance that returnables has in Argentina. But 10 years ago, when we were going through very difficult times, it was as high as 30-something%, 33-34%. In Mexico now, we are around 38%, which is very high to what we have seen in the past. But given the circumstances of this new tax, we think that has been a tremendous force behind the good resiliency that we are seeing in our products. Especially, for example, in Mexico, the 500 milliliter returnable glass presentation has grown very important. It's a presentation that is for in-house consumption. So we are, in a way, providing the consumer with this alternative that they had many years ago of going to the small mom and pop to buy the product for their meals. In general, what I can say is returnables is very important for the organization, and you will see this the importance of returnables within the mix going up and or down depending on the disposable income of the consumer and the preference of the consumer. But from our perspective, we need to watch very carefully this trend and provide the consumer with the opportunity if they want an affordable product to have that accessible, or if they have the disposable income to pay for a one-way product to have that also available. No? And I hope this gives you some light on that. For example, in Brazil, right now it's around 16-17%. My feeling is that with the new plan that we will open next month, that number should go up a little bit, especially in the Belo Horizonte, the Minas Gerais. But again, it's basically we need to be ready to serve the consumer preference for either one-way packages or returnable packages. But this time, and 2014, we have been going in every market has been very difficult environment, and that's why returnables have been growing basically in every country.
And just to clarify, so the change in returnables is a lot more to do with the consumer. Is there anything on the back end as you are introducing the new plants that is changing the economics, you know, especially on the production side of returnables for you?
Oh, no, it's totally consumer-driven. Returnables, as you can imagine, are more complex in their handling because you need to bring back the bottles to the client. The transportation cost is also a little bit larger, but it's a way of providing the affordability to the consumer. And if the consumer is hurt, then returnables, you will see it. I mean, for us, the alternative would be to lower the prices of PET. To be close to our competitors. So you will, as always, you will find a price gap that is important and the same presentation with our competitors, but we have a returnable presentation that is similar in price to our competitors that will help us compete better. No? It's totally consumer-driven, not so much because of our strategy in production line.
That's great. Thank you very much.
And our next question will come from Alex Robart from Citi.
Thanks. Hi, everybody. Two questions from our side. First on sweeteners and second on share. On sweeteners, I mean, the operating leverage in Mexico particularly, right, has reflected this very good level that you fixed in this year for your fructose and sugar. Prior calls suggest that you've got 8 to 10% lower average sweetener costs this year versus 2013 in Mexico. When we look out toward next year, I understand that right now is where you're looking and kind of negotiating with your suppliers for to set the prices for next year. How are you looking at the potential for sweetener cost relief next year versus this year? And is it safe to assume that you could perhaps bump up the percentage in high fructose? It seems that there's kind of some supply issues, you know, in sugar when we think about next year that could make the price relatively more interesting for the high fructose component of your sweetener. And kind of the tag on here is just congratulations on the Coke Life rollout, and you talk about stevia. Where does stevia fit, just from your own cost standpoint, versus high fructose and sugar? So that's the first question. Thanks.
Good morning, Alex. Yes, I mean, I think that in general, Alex, what I can say is with sweeteners. We use either high fructose or sugar, and there are limitations to the amount of high fructose that we can use because of formulation or because of the capacity that we have in some of the production facilities. But in general, those are the sweeteners that we use, and then you have all the sweeteners for the diet, the light products and zero products, which are artificial sweeteners. No? We have lower cost of sweeteners this year, you are correct. Probably, 7-8% are around that level. It's what we are reflecting in Mexico, especially. We try to negotiate with our suppliers some of the prices in advance. In the case of Brazil and Colombia, we do some hedges because the local prices are similar to the international prices, and those are markets where we can kind of do a hedge. In the case of Mexico, we have never hedged because the local price is so different from the international prices that even our accountants will account for that more as a financial transaction and not so much as a hedging of our raw materials. No? So far, we have started to negotiate some of the prices in Mexico for high fructose for next year. There is all this issue and this debate about this arbitrage between the U.S. and Mexico because of the so-called dumping of sugar in the U.S. that might create some restrictions on high fructose coming into Mexico. So there is still a lot of uncertainty about the amount of high fructose that we will be using next year. We try to cover. In the case of high fructose, we try to advance and to hedge the foreign exchange exposure because high fructose is purchased in dollar terms. So normally we go and hedge part of that to have a more stable cost for next year. And usually our strategy is to try to go either below the price that we have last year or at the same price of last year. It's just the strategic intention, Alex, that if we are able to have the same cost for sweeteners that we have the previous year, we will not have the pressure of raw materials in our for us to pass to the consumer in a price increase. In other words, with the price that we have, we are assuring certain margin. And that's why we do this, try to do these hedges, as I mentioned, sugar in Brazil and Colombia, to buy in advance some high fructose in Mexico and some other countries, and to try to cover the FX exposure for high fructose. In general, what I can say is we are seeing prices stable at these levels for 2015. We are not seeing either a continued decline on those or an increase. But these are markets that have their own volatility and there might be some movement there in the price for next year. I hope that I need to answer the question about stevia. Stevia is very little still in the formula. It's only used in Coca-Cola Life. We think that it's a good product in the sense that it partially covers the concern with calories, because it's a mid-calorie product, just to give you the right information. Regular Coca-Cola 12-ounce can, a 12-ounce product of red Coca-Cola will have 149 calories. Coca-Cola Light will have around 60, so it's a very large reduction in the calories content. But the other part of the question is that it's 100% natural sweetness. It's cane sugar plus stevia, which is also a natural sugar. And that's what we are trying to... We are focusing this for the young adults that we think are concerned with calories and also with the naturality of the sweetness. And I think there is a small segment right now, but hopefully will complement very well brand Coca-Cola, so that we have now the four different products. No? But the stevia right now, it's so small that because we have Coca-Cola Light basically in Argentina and Mexico now. Okay.
Right. Okay. Now listen, that's very helpful. The question on stevia, sorry, was just that, like, you know, on a per unit basis, is it typically like, yeah? How does it compare to the other two sweetener costs?
On a per unit basis, it's similar to sugar. And it's in that case, Coca-Cola has all the formulation, and we are sourcing so far, because it's very small volumes, we are sourcing that from Coca-Cola company, and it's similar to the sweetener cost that we have in a regular Coca-Cola.
Got it. Okay. Very helpful. Okay, and the second and last question has to do with share, in the sense, you know, the Coke results from yesterday remind us that kind of, when we think about your top markets, Mexico and Brazil, we should also be thinking about your share in terms of the non-alcoholic ready-to-drink market as a whole. And as we think about your two big markets, Brazil and Mexico, how do you see the CSD share of non-alcoholic evolving over the next couple years? And any color about the challenges and opportunities that this could bring us. So kind of more of a big picture question on the beverage industry. That would be great. Thanks, Hector.
Okay, that's a good question. In general, what we are seeing, or the trend we are seeing, is you see usually, and it's basically constant in all the countries, you see growth in CSD. You see growth in water as part of the non-carbonated, the non-alcoholic beverage segment. And normally, you see growth in juices and some other food products also at a faster pace than CSDs. So in general, you will see a small erosion on CSDs market share if you look at the total non-alcoholic ready-to-drink drugs. There are some exceptions. For example, in Mexico this quarter, we saw kind of flattish volumes in Mexico for CSDs with a very strong effort and obviously trying to compensate for the tax impact. And we saw a reduction in juices and nectars, which is not normal, but juices and nectars were also affected by the tax. But on the other hand, we saw important growth in power. These are also being affected in Mexico. In other countries like Argentina and Brazil are growing very importantly. These are also impacted by the tax in Mexico, and I think, in my opinion, these stay similar to juices and nectars at a price point that is not that competitive with CSDs, and that's why the consumer is also moving a little bit to CSDs. So it's difficult to give a general answer. It will change country by country, but in general knowledge, the trend is that CSDs will grow, will continue to grow, and you will see other categories growing a little bit faster than CSDs.
Okay, thank you.
And our next question will come from Fernando Ferreira from Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Hi, good morning, Hector. Good morning, everyone. I have two questions. First one on Venezuela. Can you share with us what was the percentage of sales and EBITDA that it represented this quarter? And also, I mean, how do you feel about the need to eventually have to move to a weaker FX there going forward? That would be my first question.
Good morning, Fernando. Venezuela, similar to what we had on the previous quarters, Venezuela represents around 7% of our volume, or less, in the total company, and it represents around 17 to 18% of our EBITDA. This specific quarter, because we are basically using a 12 Bolivar per dollar exchange rate versus 6.30 that we used last year. My opinion is that Venezuela didn't have the same impact as in some of the previous quarters where you were seeing a lot of growth in the profitability. So when you look at the incremental profits from Venezuela this quarter, it's basically the same level that we had before. Why? Because we increased in local currency close to 100% the numbers, and we use an exchange rate that is also 100% higher. So in terms of growth for this quarter, it's not as much as what we saw in other periods. But that's the level what it represents. It's 7% of the volume, around 17 to 18% of the profits on a consolidated basis.
Sure, thank you. And then my second question is regarding the plan that Coca-Cola announced yesterday that they want to accelerate the refranchising in the U.S. Is that a model that might interest you, the one that they have announced for the refranchising there?
The U.S., what we have been commenting is still correct. I think that the U.S. is a different market from what we have in Latin America. If and when we are invited, we certainly take a look at that. We think that there are interesting points into the U.S. market. There are some difficulties in the U.S. market that are very difficult from what we see in Latin America or Asia. And if that becomes available, we certainly take a look at the opportunity in the U.S. and see what can we have in value versus the price that we need, we will need to pay for those territories, no? if they are available for us. No?
Sure, but my understanding is that the separation between the production and the distribution is not something that would attract you. Is that correct? Still correct?
Yes, there has been a lot of indications that production would be centralized. We do not fully understand to what extent is that is going to be all over the U.S. and Canada, or it would be some different territories. And as I said, we need to understand the whole picture of an opportunity in the U.S. market when and if that's presented to us. In our opinion, it would be much better if we have the production, because we think that we are very good at organizing the whole value chain from suppliers all the way to getting the product to the retailer. If at the end of the day the proposal is different and we would be buying a finished product and just delivering, it's a different model that we would need to analyze at that time.
Sure. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question will come from Berenice Munoz from Barclays.
Hi, hello. All my questions were already responded. Thank you.
Operator, I
and the next question will come from Jose Jordan from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, good morning, Hector and everybody. My questions were mostly answered as well. I just want a clarification about your answer of a flat sweetener cost for Mexico next year. Given the big decline in corn year on year, it would seem that that would go in your favor. So the reason for your saying that there's going to be flat cost, is it only the adverse move in the Mexican exchange rate, or is it that you, as you mentioned, that you think there will not be, you'll not be allowed to import any more fructose to make a difference in your mix, and I guess I'd like to see your view on what Mexican sugar price will do, because that's the last of the factors at play here.
Good morning, Jose. No, but my comment is in a way to be conservative in this sense. We are using more or less 60% high fructose in Mexico. High fructose will certainly, in our opinion, we have lower prices than what we have in 2014, and we have already locked in a portion of that at 3 to 5% below what we have in 2014. The big question is, if with all this debate about this arbitrage, if we are going to be able to bring this fructose into Mexico or not. And then there is the other part, even if we stay with 60% fructose, then there's the other 40% in sugar, which we don't know exactly what is going to happen with the price. We think that all in all, we'll have, in a conservative way, flattish prices for sweeteners. There is a chance that if we can import 60% of high fructose, we'll have lower prices than 2014. That's for sure. And you are correct in pointing out that with the prices of corn, we have an opportunity for next year. No?
Okay, very clear. Thank you.
Thank you.
And it appears there are no further questions at this time. Mr. Trevino, I'd like to turn the conference back to you for any additional remarks.
Thank you for your interest in Coca-Cola FEMSA, and as always, Alfredo, Roland, and the team are available to answer any remaining questions that you might have. Thank you.
This does conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation.